welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. My guest this week is a return guest, one of my favorite return guests, although I love all of my guests equally. I guess I love Marissa a little bit more than everybody else, in case she's listening, but then everybody else I love equally. Micah Sargent. Micah, thank you for joining me.
Thank you for having me back. It's always a pleasure. You know, I blame you in the best way for me getting into Star Trek and being the fan that I am now. So it's always a fun time to get to hang out and talk Trek with you.
Well, I would take that as a compliment, and you're welcome for getting back into Star Trek. Now, before we get too deep into Star Trek, first, let's talk a little bit about yourself. So why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
All right. I am a senior editor at Mobile Nations. Many of you have probably heard of iMore or Android Central or one of those many fine sites. So I write there. And then I also do too many podcasts.
Too many.
Too many. The one, I'll name two. One that I would love to talk about is one that's right here on this network. It's called Somehow I Manage, and it is a podcast in which I and Tiffany Arment discuss episodes of the U.S. version of The Office. Hmm. And so we're doing sort of a walkthrough of that. I think we're about to publish episode 9. So we're moving right along through that. And then the other one that I'll briefly mention is called Lucid. It is a dream interpretation and sleep science podcast that I do with one of my dear friends. And so we have listeners send in their dreams and we interpret them live on the show. And then we also talk about cool things involving sleep. So it's a very good time.
Now, let's talk a little bit about The Office, because there is, of course, the UK version of The Office. Yes. And there are probably many different versions of The Office now, but I imagine the two that people know are the UK version, which is the original, and then the US version, which the first maybe half of this first season is pretty much identical to the UK Office, except different actors. And then Correct. It kind of becomes its own thing. Which one do you prefer?
Well, okay. I want to say that the UK version of The Office is very good, and it is in existence, and I appreciate its existence, but it is not my office. My office is the US one. I have, I kid you not, seen by this time, I don't know, like 20 times every single episode at least. I've seen every episode of The Office many, many, many times over the course of my life thus far. And I very much love the show. And I mean, otherwise, I don't think you could launch a podcast about it. But yeah, I mean, I get the appreciation of the UK version, but because there's just so much more in the US version, that's the one that sort of swept my heart.
And I think that Steve Carell does an interesting thing that I don't think Ricky Gervais is very interested in doing with his character, which is it makes him kind of a lovable doofus. Yes. Who you are. It's still cringe. He still does so many things that are wrong, but they're generally coming from a good place. Mm-hmm. Whereas I don't think you could say the same of David Brent. David Brent is kind of, you feel sorry for him because he's trying so hard. But he's also, he has more of an edge than Michael Scott does.
Yes, absolutely. It's all, I mean, all of the characters in the UK version, everyone's just a lot meaner.
It's true.
And, you know, people, I think, don't get to form as much of a connection with those characters. It's sort of like, I watch this and I laugh if it's my comedy, and if it's not my comedy, then I just turn it off. But the US version, I think that there's something for every type of humor and every, the black bile, yellow bile, all the humors. and there's something for everybody, I think, in the US version.
And I think that, as well, I know that my sister-in-law, Raina, is one of these people who, it sounds like she's one of your people, who, when she has nothing else to watch on TV, or when she is just watching TV, she is watching The Office on Netflix. Yes. She starts at the beginning, works her way through to the end, and then starts again.
Starts over. She is my people. Hello, my people.
It's fascinating. I don't know of any other. I feel like for The Office, that happens a lot more than any other shows. Now, I'm sure there are other shows people do this kind of endless cycle with, but I feel like more people do it with The Office for some reason, and I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know. There's maybe some. I bet if someone took the time to analyze it, there's some quality to it that makes it possible for it to sort of rest in the background. But my problem is I'm too busy remembering things. Like I'll be, you know, working on something else, and then I'll hear just like two words, and then I remember the scene and I start laughing, and then suddenly I'm quoting it, and then suddenly I'm sitting on the couch in front of the television instead of doing what I was supposed to be doing. So it's, I actually try not to watch it if I have work that I need to get done. But if it's just sort of, you know, I don't want the house to be quiet or something, then hey, there's a good old Michael Scott in the background probably making someone feel uncomfortable.
Probably. Now before we get to Star Trek, which we will, I want to ask you who your favorite character from The Office is.
Oh, boy. So this is not a popular answer, I've found. When you claim to be a big super fan of The Office, you sort of are pressured into choosing one of the main characters, and you're also required to like Jim and Pam's relationship. And I don't care about Jim and Pam's relationship.
What?
It's the least interesting thing in the whole series for me.
You heartless monster.
I'm spitting fire right now. It's just, I'm sorry. I'm sorry to my people, but it's just so boring. But anyway, my favorite character from The Office is Holly Flax. She is an HR representative who comes to replace Toby, and eventually Michael Scott and Holly Flax get married, and she is actually the reason that, well, I don't want to do any spoilers, so yeah, they get married, and she's just this wonderfully kind, upbeat, sweet person who very passively makes Michael a better person. Michael aspires to be better for her, and so it makes me respect Michael a lot more, their relationship, and she just warms my heart. And the two of them together are just the goofiest goofs. And I think that it's very adorable, very sweet, and very wholesome. And that's the kind of character that I end up falling in love with. And so Holly Flax all the way.
See, there you go. That's a deep cut. She's a main character in the later seasons, but I feel like if you ask the casual Office viewer, they are not going to know who she is. So
yeah, they're probably going to say, I hope they wouldn't say Jim for the love of God.
Goodness gracious, you don't like Jim.
My little brother has once told me that I reminded him of Jim, and I didn't talk to him for 6 months.
And then you looked at a camera and made a face.
No, I am Jim.
That's right. Oh, man. I do like The Office. I could talk forever about The Office, but this is not Somehow I Manage.
So not if you want to hear, are here.
If you want to hear Micah talk about The Office, tune in to Somehow I Manage. If you want to hear him talk about Star Trek, wait 1 second, because I'm just about to ask him about Star Trek. So
love how that works.
You know, it's amazing. Now, the episode that we are going to talk about today comes from everybody's least favorite Star Trek series, that's not true. Almost everybody's least favorite Star Trek series, Star Trek Enterprise. It is episode 18 from season one, which I think everyone can agree is probably the weakest season of Enterprise. And this episode, spoiler alert, doesn't do anything to negate what I just said. It's not really that good. At least that's my opinion. Micah, you might like it a lot, and we'll have a spirited discussion about it. But before we talk about it, the name of it is Rogue Planet. Before we talk about it, I want to talk about your general thoughts and experiences with Enterprise, because you could be. I have found, and I promise I'll let you answer, I have found that the younger people, you're younger than I am, like Enterprise more than us old grizzled Star Trek fans. So I don't know where you fall in the spectrum of Enterprise like.
Okay, here is how I feel about Enterprise. I do not hate Enterprise. I do not even I find a lot more qualities in Enterprise than some of the people who are most vocal about their distaste for the series. Mm-hmm. That said, of of all of the, you know, all of the different series of Star Trek, it is certainly at the bottom of the list. And, you know, I was feeling, again, it's been a while since I've watched Enterprise through, and going into it, I was feeling pretty okay, you know, okay, this is going to be a fine episode. And then that doggone intro music started playing, and I almost just shut the whole thing off and said, well, going to have to tell Scott I can't come on because my life is ruined. I hate the intro music so much, and now it's in my head, and I just, I don't understand. I don't understand what they were thinking. It's just bad, bad, bad.
Well, it wouldn't be an episode of Random Trek where we talked about Enterprise if we did not bemoan the fact that the theme song is no good, because it is no good. And I don't know if I like it more or less. The first two seasons have this slower version, and then they decided, hey, nobody likes it, so let's speed it up. And I don't think they re-recorded it. I think they just literally sped up the song.
Oh, my Lord.
Now, I could be wrong about that. People who know better than I, write in and correct me.
Oh, no, I'm deciding that's the truth. Everyone, no one correct anyone in public, because I need to just believe that's what happened.
But I was watching it with Marisa sitting next to me. We watched the little teaser, fine, and then it started up, and she was like, this is not Star Trek music. And I said, no, it isn't, but yet, here it is.
Ugh. Well, okay. And the way that it starts, too, first of all, it doesn't take that long to get a photo. I mean, there are like 15 opportunities where Trip could have taken the photo just fine. And it's just like the whole intro is very awkward. Mm-hmm. The only part I liked in the sort of cold open is the way that T'Pol responds to Trip and saying, like, no, we're not going to shut off the monitors in the situation room, you big dummy. We have to keep those on. But all of that is said with the face of a Vulcan. And so there's just so much emotion in that dead look. And I think it's fantastic.
And Trip is using like a Sony point-and-shoot camera, you would think, in the future.
They glued some plastic pieces onto
it. Exactly. They would have a better... And Marisa pointed this out. It made a shutter sound when he pressed the button. And,
oh, God.
And
I didn't even notice that.
I like to think that he just didn't go into the settings and turn off the fake shutter sound that it makes. Because there's, I know in the future there will be no shutters in cameras. So... And he just likes it. It's like when you know those people that you come across in an elevator or something, and they're using their iPhone and they're typing something, and you hear the little taps because they haven't turned off the keyboard sound.
Yeah,
and it just drives you crazy. You just want to say, "Do you know you could turn that off?"
It's a very Tom Paris move, I think. That seems like something Tom Paris would do.
It is,
you know, in the future, like when cars are even more Tesla than they are now, he would put a stereo system in there that just makes vroom vroom noises because it's sort of a blast from the past. So maybe Trip and Paris would be friends.
Well, that's true. And you know, some fancier cars and maybe not so fancy cars that have good sound isolation in their cabins, they actually pipe in fake engine noises because people need to hear them because they've spent so much money on this fancy car. Exactly. So I wouldn't be surprised if that was...
As a people, we are broken, so we'll never get to the Star Trek future anyway because we pipe sounds into the car.
That's right. This is shut it down, everybody. Civilization is done.
We've already broken it. There's no fixing it now.
Yeah, and Archer does. So Trip is taking Captain Archer's picture because they want to make a painting of him, I guess, that they hang in Starfleet Academy, I'm assuming.
It still makes no sense.
I don't understand.
He's like, why can't we just use a photo of me that already exists? Because he's had his photo taken for like his badge or whatever. And yeah, I don't know. Because why in the future would they not just have sort of what we kind of have now with those apps that end up holding onto your photos for years and years, where they upload to the server and then sort of make this weird fake paint over the top of them. I don't think that all of this extra stuff is needed, but whatever.
No, but they need his picture of him sitting looking bold, but he is not so interested. And that doesn't really come up later. I guess somebody just thought it would be a funny idea to have Trip try to take Archer's picture.
If it wouldn't have gone so long, then it should have just ended with T'Pol's face. And maybe they can do like a womp, womp, womp in the background, and then I'd be good with it.
And then they pan to like Reed practicing his trombone or something. And Archer says, "Damn it, I told you not on the bridge."
And then somebody on the bridge, you know, does a shrug, and then it cuts to black, and we start
exactly. But
and the horrible music plays.
Oh man, that music! While the photo session is taking place, they come across a planet that is not orbiting a sun. Or a star, I guess I should say, technically. It's a rogue planet.
And that's rogue.
The title of the episode. And of course, they are a Starfleet ship, so they are going to go check out this rogue planet. And that is what the rest of this episode is all about. This is one of those rare, well, not rare, semi-rare episodes
medium
of Star Trek. Medium rare, yes. Where there is there's only A plot, no B plot, one story through the whole thing. Sometimes that works because the story is interesting and meaty, and sometimes you get something like this episode.
Well, see, I think you just didn't notice the B plot. You'll notice that Trip is actually carrying around his digital camera with him, and he's taking photos of all of the cast. And so it's sort of this subtle B plot. That that's not true. None of that's true.
I was going to say, wait a second. I did not notice that. I did notice he was taking pictures at one point later, but I thought I missed an entire subplot, which would have... looked poorly upon me.
Gotcha. Sorry.
So this is one of those episodes where I feel like it could have been interesting. The premise is interesting, but the execution is not that interesting. And I think, once again, it all boils down to the fact that I don't really like many of the characters on Enterprise.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes it difficult for me to be interested in it. And I often have trouble remembering the names of the characters, which is a problem. And there aren't that many characters on Enterprise. I'm just saying those because those are my own biases with Enterprise. So if you love this episode and you're grinding your teeth as you hear me say I didn't like it, I don't really like Enterprise. So there you go.
So I like Dr. Phlox, but...
I like Dr. Phlox. He's the best character on Enterprise. I think we can all agree.
I agree. Many of the rest of them, sometimes T'Pol does some very interesting things, especially later on. But certainly, Phlox is a constant throughout in terms of my appreciation of the character. But I'm with you. Because I agree, the idea of this whole piece is very good, and I wish that it had turned out better and that every scene between Archer and the Wraith did not feel so doggone fake and poorly done. I don't mean like visually, I mean just the acting there was so subpar and none of it felt real. I didn't feel the connection between the two of them. Like the music is trying to form this connection that none of their acting is, and it all just felt very blech.
Yeah, and anyone who has listened to me talk about Enterprise before knows what I'm going to say. But Scott Bakula is an actor who I like and who I think is a really talented actor. I have seen him in numerous things and I've enjoyed him greatly. From, Quantum Leap to Murphy Brown, always charismatic. He's a good-looking guy. He looks like a starship captain. He's got all these things going for him. And yet, in practice, he is so boring. And it could be that the writing and the directing and somebody told him, hey, Captain Archer should really be boring. So maybe he's just doing a really good job. But I have never really liked Captain Archer.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I love his dog, of course.
Oh, yes. Porthos, very cute.
Yes, but his interactions with other characters, his story, none of it's very good. I mean, what is he supposed to be? Because so many of the other character or so many of the other captains, you can very clearly mark their sort of archetype. And with Archer, what's his archetype?
What's his deal? I don't know.
What's your deal, man?
So he is the first kind of captain. He's an explorer, but he doesn't really seem happy about that. I don't know. He plays water polo, if that helps anybody.
That must be it. He's the sporty sporter.
And he's got a dog. And that's it. I've talked about this before. I love Porthos because he's so cute, and I think he's probably my third favorite character in Enterprise.
Oh my god, that's awful.
But I also feel like it's kind of jerkish for the captain to just bring his dog with him.
Yeah. Okay, I've got this dog now, so you'll just have to deal with it. That's totally fair. And they do bring that up, and I remember one or two of the episodes where it was like an affront that the dog was involved in being on the planet or something like that, or maybe the dog had to relieve itself and then they wanted to kill the dog. So there is some amount there's some amount of consequence for bringing the dog, but certainly everybody else on board seems to be cool with it.
It's true. Nobody else has a pet that we know of, except for Dr. Phlox, but those aren't pets. Those are his pharmaceutical needs, his medical
those are
equipment.
His assistants.
Exactly. Dr. Phlox does show up on this episode very briefly to say, I found some cellular matter in this wound. And that's really all he does. But I guess we should talk about, so they beam down to this planet. It's very dark because there's no star.
It's a rogue planet.
It's a rogue planet. And I do not understand their low light equipment.
Right? I wrote that down in the notes. Like, okay, why just one eye?
Yes.
Why is it? None of it makes any sense. It's just one eye, like an ocular dealie that sits over the top of your eye. A monocle. A midnight monocle.
Ooh, alliteration. 2 points to you.
I love this game show.
The one eye thing I don't get, because why? You only want to see in the dark in one eye, I guess. It doesn't make any sense. And I don't really get why they light up.
Yeah, maybe they were going for a pirate thing with the one eye, because pirates wear eye patches, often
true.
Not because pirates wore, I shouldn't say wear, pirates wore eye patches, not because they had lost an eye, but because by keeping one eye covered with the patch, their eye was always adjusted for the dark. So when they went below decks, or if it started to get dark, they could lift up that eye patch and be able to see in the dark because their pupil was larger.
I didn't know that.
However, it doesn't make as much sense in this situation. And yeah, you'd think that the light shining into their eye is going to keep them from being able to see anything in front of them.
Yeah, I was, and I know I the real answer, I'm sure, is because somebody thought it looked cool. And it's dark, so they need a way to light up the characters so that we can see them, because it is a TV show. So I understand all of that. But I think that as a piece of, if you look at it not as a TV show but as something that is more practical, the things I kept thinking about were, in situations where you would want night vision, you want to be sneaking around and it's dark, so the last thing you'd want to do is put on a piece of equipment that lights up your face for other people to see you.
Yeah, and it's green too, which is it's toward blue, which means that those light waves go a lot farther than something like red, which is what we see the other hunters wearing.
Now those made a little more sense to me.
Yeah, I agree.
And I will say, I don't want to be all negative about this episode, because I have said this before, I think Enterprise looks really good. The production value is very high. I like the design of everything. And there's one shot where they show the Enterprise kind of orbiting the planet and kind of coming from behind it and coming up. And that's a beautiful shot. And I really enjoyed it. And there's another moment that I enjoyed. Two things I enjoyed in this episode. And that's it. So I'm trying to be a little positive, Mike.
There you go. I also liked the silly little side swipe, I guess, I don't know what else to call it, that Malcolm gets on old Archer, because he had 28 badges in the Eagle Scouts and Archer only has 26 badges. So Malcolm sort of tries to be the captain and leads the way, and Archer's like, no, I'll take it.
I'm the captain. And that was the second thing I liked. I enjoyed that little moment between the two.
Spoiler, sorry.
Yes, no, that's fine, because I enjoyed, because Archer, that is the point at which his kind of dour persona helps, because he's like, Trip is like, Reed is like, oh, I have 28, and Archer's like, oh, I only have 26. And I like that Reed's response is, well, that's not bad, and then keeps walking.
there are some fun interactions from time to time, but the characters, as you've said, you know, they never have enough like story of their own for you to get invested in them.
No, and so the characters, like, there's Reed, who is the security guy, as we previously mentioned. His big standout thing is he has an accent.
That's about it.
There's Trip. His standout thing is that he has a different accent.
And has some rustic hospitality.
He does. He's got some southern charm. And I guess he and Paul had a relationship. So that's, there you go. Spoiler alerts for later episodes of Enterprise. It's Paul, I like. She, as Micah said earlier, kind of really grows into an interesting character. And I remember her. Captain Archer is Captain Archer. He's whatever.
Who is that again? Captain Archer?
Yeah, it's not important. Ensign Merriweather. Mayweather. See, look. I can't remember their names. He's a pilot. That's really what we know.
Yeah, his thing is sort of like being... he reminds me of like... I don't know. He's just sort of smiley and happy-go-lucky and just sort of... excited about everything. Like he certainly has his cup of coffee every morning.
He does, and he doesn't do much in this episode, even though this episode requires them to do some fancy footwork with their shuttlecraft, but he's not the one piloting it, so sorry. And Hoshi, there's Hoshi. I like Hoshi. They don't really do much with her, but I like her.
Yeah, they don't do enough with Hoshi other than have her sort of freak out at the beginning. And then I don't think go deep enough on, I don't mean at the beginning of this episode, I mean at the beginning of the series, about sort of being away from Earth and the way that alien life sometimes works. And it's just like, okay, you know, we could have done so much more with that. But hey, if it wasn't for Hoshi Sato, I don't know if in the later series we would have the awesome translation skills or, you know, built-in translation machines. I can't think of what it's called for some reason.
The Universal Translator. There you go.
Yeah, if it wasn't for Hoshi Sato. So that plays a role.
It's true. Good for her. And I like her. But once again, in this episode, she doesn't do much, which is fine because this episode is really all about Archer and Wraith, I guess. And maybe hunting is good or bad. Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Hunting
is a thing.
Sentient beings is not good,
yes.
But hunting lower life forms is okay.
Is if it's... culturally appropriate.
Yeah. Okay.
Is what Eska. I think. What the. Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't matter. I should say, for anyone who is a hunter listening, that I am not a hunter. I have never been hunting.
I am not a hunter.
So I don't, I am not in the hunting culture here on Earth or any planet, frankly. I am. Not particularly against hunting, but I am not particularly interested in either, which is why I have never done it. So don't write me any letters.
I don't want any letters either. Not a hunter, but not against it.
Exactly.
I am a fisher person from time to time, certainly.
Well, see, there you go. That's like hunting, only you don't shoot them.
Yeah, and I've caught a few sentient beings.
Have you?
Yeah, we had some conversations, and I sort of, this is awkward. I put a hook into you. Let me just
catch and release. It's fine. Catch and release.
Have a cup of tea and send them on their way.
That's right. I will. I think we can all agree that you shouldn't hunt sentient beings. So everything else is okay.
It's the most dangerous game.
That's true. But you shouldn't do it.
exactly. Yes.
And so there's this shuttle. They scan the planet. They go down there because there's a ship down there, but they can't find any life forms that are humanoid life forms. So they're poking around. They have these stupid things on their faces. They hear creepy noises.
The midnight monocles.
That's right. The midnight monocles. They hear some noises. They still can't find anything. They decide, you know, what's the best thing to do when you're on a creepy planet? Split up the party. And so they do that. And then they come across the big reveal is that there are these aliens that use this planet as basically their hunting preserve. And they visit and they hunt. These pig
they get
things.
Like 4 days or something like that. Only each little group gets 4 days to hunt on the planet to preserve game.
Yes.
Yeah, and they hunt these little piggy creatures, right?
It's like going on a safari in olden times. Big
going
game
on
hunting.
A safari, yeah, when there was hunting as part of the safari and
exactly.
Not just watching.
And not just taking pictures. But they assure, it is immediately obvious that these people are lying to the Enterprise crew and that something is up. We don't know
what. They
don't
want them to be there at first. And it's very awkward sort of elongated silences and weird stares. And it's, it's not good.
And I think Star Trek V has taught us that Star Trek is not at its best around a campfire. But there are many campfires in this episode and some conversations. And these aliens are kind of your stock Star Trek aliens. They have
forehead on them.
They have a little bit of forehead. They have different noses, so they're a little upgraded from like the baseline. It's not just like a little squiggly thing on their foreheads, but they're not all that interesting. Although they are kind of wearing like camouflage jumpsuits, which I appreciate because they look like hunters. So that's good. And they have guns that look like hunting rifles.
And they have better goggles. I don't know what to call them though. Midnight monocles and go-go gadget goggles.
Ghoulish goggles. It's scary. And so they're like, no, it's totally cool. We're just hunting these pig things. In fact, you just ate one of the things that we killed. And everyone's like, oh.
But they keep being like, but they're so fun to hunt. And you wouldn't understand if only you knew.
That's right. And this is, so part of Star Trek is... I often mention there's a lot of casual racism in Star Trek. And this is the point at which, you know, they say, oh, we hunt these things. And you would think Starfleet officers making first contact, you don't want to judge in other people's culture.
Right?
And Archer's like, well, we don't hunt anymore. It's kind of gross.
Yeah. Wives. Okay. I'm glad I'm not the only, I mean, I don't see how that did not stand out to the writers, the way that he's like, oh, you do that? Well, that's been gone for a long time for us because we're better than you. He might as well have said.
Yeah. I didn't think that was a great thing on his part. Even if he thought it, he should have, that's inside voice, Captain Archer. Just keep it
that
inside.
Goes in the head.
And then he's like, but we'd like to hang out for a little while if that's cool. And Malcolm Reed is like, you snuck up on us and we couldn't find you. So I want to learn how you did that. And apparently the only way I can learn that is if I go hunting with you. But I promise not to kill anything, even though I'm the tactical officer and my job is kind of to kill things. So I didn't really understand that either.
I didn't get that either. And I was like, I could still see him killing things, and also like, why did he have to say that? I feel like that would be a given in a way, and so who was he saying it for? Many questions.
It's very strange.
Malcolm.
And so it's all set up so that they are chilling on the planet. Everybody goes to sleep because it's 6 hours until the hunt begins, and Captain Archer is like, no, you know what, I just want to hang out by the fire all by myself for a while and just, you know, think about stuff. And also, why didn't he bring his dog with him? You think this is the perfect time to bring your
this
dog?
This would have been great.
But I guess they don't have transporters, and so he didn't know if... well, they don't use the transporters. They have them. He didn't know if it would be okay for Porthos, so he left him up there. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Everybody's like, okay, I did like... This is another moment I liked. Trip was going to go to sleep, and Archer says, no, I just want to stay here by the fire. And Trip's like, well, have fun. Because it's like, this is the weirdest thing you're doing, but... But the reason that he's doing this is so that he can go to sleep and wake up because he thinks he hears someone says his name.
Oh, that's meta.
Yes. And he says it. You hear Jonathan. And he is in the long line of Starfleet captains who make very poor choices. He decides, you know what? I'm on this dark planet. I have a bunch of people with me, but I'm just going to wander into the woods and see if I can find who's whispering my name. That sounds cool.
You know, if I had a dollar for every time I've done that, I'd have $0 because I'd be dead.
Seems like a really bad choice on his part. It turns out fine in the long run, but it's still weird. And we see he sees a woman in the distance, and he tries to follow her, and she's wearing quite a diaphanous gown.
Yeah, very good.
And it is it's a throwback to the original series. I feel like she is costumed as if she's from an original series episode, and everybody else is not. Though, probably, to be fair, in the original series, she would have had much more cleavage showing. But,
yeah, true.
But it's of that ilk. And Captain Archer tries to run after her, and then suddenly she disappears. And he's like, oh, my goodness.
Spooky.
Where is she?
Should have had the ghoulish goggles.
That's right. Or you should have borrowed Trip's camera.
Yeah, there you go. and take a picture faster than Trip.
That's right, because he can't do it very fast. And he comes back and he's like, dudes, I saw this woman. And the aliens are kind of jerky about it. But
yeah, they keep teasing him about it.
But I feel like...
trying to make him think it's not real.
I feel like that is... I was watching this barista, as I said, and she said, boy, those guys are jerks. I kind of feel like that's what happens when you have a bunch of guys around and somebody says something like that. You get made fun of because it's kind of weird.
Yeah. So, well, and plus they, like, later on we'll see that they knew exactly what it was.
That's true.
But
they're
at the time they were still sort of trying to throw them off the course. But yeah, at the same time, you know, I imagine if you go hunting, you know, y'all got your guns and somebody does something funny, you're probably going to tease them for it.
It's true. I think that you just offended any hunters that are still listening to this with
yes,
that.
I'm sorry, dear friends.
But sorry, it wasn't me. Send your letters to Micah.
Send your emails to me.
That's right.
It's fine.
And so this is the excitement in this episode, right? This woman who shouldn't be there. And the aliens are like, are you sure she wasn't part of your crew? And Archer's like, well... there's like 50 people on the crew. I know them all. She's not our crew member. And he says, are you sure she wasn't part of your hunting party? And they very reasonably say, well, nobody else is part of our hunting party. And certainly not a human woman. Because we've never met humans. So.
You doof. You goof.
And so there's a lot of other stuff that doesn't really matter. Archer meets this woman a bunch of times.
Hold on, I just have to pause you there and say, you could say that about so many episodes of Enterprise. There's a whole lot of stuff that doesn't really matter.
It's true. Archer meets this woman a bunch of times. He feels like he knows her, but he can't quite place it. And then one of the hunters gets injured while they're hunting, and they have to beam up to the Enterprise. Although they don't beam up, they take the shuttlecraft.
After lying and saying they got attacked by a piggy when
exactly.
It was definitely not a piggy.
It was not a piggy. And we have seen through kind of cutscenes like these, I don't know how you describe them, like big
slugs
that are more nimble than your normal slugs. And we find out that these slugs, not only are they nimble slugs, they are shaped.
The nimble slug.
Oh, the nimble slug. That should be a D&D monster. They are shape-changing nimble slugs.
Oh, God. Shape-shifting telepathic nimble
yes,
slugs.
Yes, it keeps adding up. And not only, and this is the game that our hunter friends like to hunt for some reason, and they call them wraiths. Because they are difficult to find, because they can read your mind and they can shapeshift, so that makes it hard to hunt. I'll give it to them. But they have found out through, I guess,
trial of error,
I don't know,
yeah,
that if you corner them and terrify them, they emit some kind of chemical that they can pick up on scanners, the hunters can pick up on scanners, and so that's how they have been hunting them.
I wonder if they can celebrate Halloween. They probably wouldn't be able to. It'd just be the whole planet would be filled with that chemical.
That's true. Everybody would just be scared. But where does the candy come from? They don't have any industry.
Have
so
true. Darn. No Snickers on that planet. On the rogue planet.
Oh. And so that's they hunt these things because that's what they do. It is clear that they are sentient beings, so it's not cool. And this woman, who is not a woman but a sentient telepathic shape-shifting nimble slug
which is totally going to show up in your next campaign that you
that's
run.
That's right. Maybe it already has.
Dun, dun,
nobody
dun.
Knows. Has decided. It's unclear to me why she picked Archer, other than he's
because
the main character
different.
Of the show, but he's different. Reed and Tripp are also different, but she doesn't pick them.
T'Pol is also different.
That's true.
T'Pol is very different.
And I do. There's a good scene where T'Pol, Captain Archer's like, no, I need to find this woman, but I can only find her if I'm by myself.
And T'Pol's like, you need to go lie down.
That's right. And Archer's like, why don't you believe me? And she said, well, let's just think about this for a second. If I said I needed to go into the woods to find a half-naked man, what would you say to me? And he's like, I gotta go.
I would start singing Into the Woods.
That's right. Let's go find this half-naked man for you, T'Pol. And she did. So yeah, for a little while, Archer thinks, oh, no, this is a hallucination. Everybody's like, you're totally hallucinating, but he's not. And she like trips and she catches him, the slug lady. And he's like, oh, you are a real slug lady. And she's like, yes. Yeah,
slug lady is whenever she's in human form. Right.
That's right. And it turns out that much later in the episode, Archer remembers that his mom used to tell him this poem, I guess, that featured a woman with apple blossoms in her hair that the poet had caught a glimpse of only once and spent the rest of his life looking for. And that's
never elusive woman.
That's right. And this is the woman that has been pulled from his memory by the telepathic shape-shifting nimble slugs to convince that he should save them. And so he does. Well, really, Dr. Phlox does, because Dr. Phlox has harvested the cells from the injured hunter and has created some kind of, I don't know, spray or tablet. They don't really get into it.
Yeah, it's like that stuff that, you know, you keep in a bathroom so that people, when guests come over, they can use it to sort of make this place smell fresh again.
Ah, yes. It's a little bit like it's a slug Febreze. So it doesn't actually mask the scent, but it makes it impossible for you to detect it. It's a fine difference, but it's true that Febreze just blocks your ability to smell something. It doesn't cover the scent. Fun fact, see, you learn things about pirates and Febreze.
That's kind of, I don't like that. That's like taking my agency from me. Don't mess with my sense of smell, please.
Well, I kind of think that you give the form of consent is when you use Febreze. Bursts into your house and starts using it, then I think you have a case.
Okay, there we go. Next time that happens, I'm going to say, my lawyer Scott McNulty said.
That's right. I've gone to the finest law school in the quadrant. And so somehow maybe I was not paying attention, because I will admit, Micah, just between you and I, that my attention did drift during this episode. So there may have been a scene where they explain how they somehow deploy whatever it is.
Oh, that never happens. Nope. Because I was wondering that too. I sort of did a double take, like, was I looking literally anywhere else but at the screen? Whatever. Like, what? When did they do the thing? But yeah, they never show it. They just decide to show the hunters basically not being able to detect the creatures as the way to communicate that. But I have to say, I was so distracted by Trip going in and getting a cold glass of milk. I'm still thinking about it. You have this thing that can make all of these different wonderful creations, mm-hmm. and you pour yourself a gigantic, mind you, glass of moo juice, and it's just wrong.
Some people like milk. What's wrong with you? Those people are children, but still.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Trip is a grown adult who should be drinking water, probably, because he's just been on this planet that's dehydrating him, and he goes for a gigantic glass of milk, and it's like late. I just don't get it.
Well, the only thing that could have been worse if it was buttermilk, just a big glass of buttermilk.
I'm going to get sick. Gross.
Delicious. It's weird. And so really, at the end of this, they have only made it harder for the hunters to hunt these things. They
leveled the playing field.
Exactly. They haven't really stopped it from happening. And then they leave. They're like, peace out, everybody.
Now that we made this harder for you, we're leaving. I think that was supposed to sort of be like, in an age before we really nailed down the whole let's not interfere with cultures thing, this was their way of sort of, you know, we're just going to push things. We're not going to completely break them. We'll just give a little nudge here. And that way we're within our rights to do this.
Right. I guess this, we have to respect at a certain level your culture, but
not wholly.
That's right. We have to, and to be fair, you know, it's not cool to hunt, as we've already established, not cool to hunt sentient beings. So it's easy to fall on the side of Archer on this case. But they're still there, one imagines, hunting, trying to kill these wraiths as hard as they can.
To this day.
To this very day.
With their ghoulish goggles.
That's right. Somewhere you will hear a silent scream of a wraith being shot by a man wearing ghoulish goggles.
Oh my God. And then you will somehow feel the scent. Feel the scent of fear as it travels galaxies and rests on your skin.
That's right. And then you'll think, Jonathan. Micah, thank you for joining me.
Yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for helping me tear apart this episode of Enterprise.
With love, with love.